Today on Secular, criminal organizations trafficking women, children, families, single adults over the U.S. border, drugs as well, earning up to $14 million a day as the crisis at the border gets worse. We'll also be joined by ACLJ Senior Counsel for Global Affairs, Mike Pompeo.
Live from Washington, D.C., J. Secular Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
I can't even believe what this number will be when we get the numbers from March, and we're only midway, you know, through the month. Criminal organizations who are utilizing the weakness of the Biden strategy at the border and his we're going to talk about with Secretary Mike Pompeo, Senior Counsel for Global Affairs, the ACLJ, about this idea that, you know, words matter when you're President of the United States, when you're a leader, and when you basically tell the world that you're going to open up again. They take that literally. But the downfall of this is, of course, what it's costing the country, the national security threat it poses, and the humanitarian crisis it creates. It went from a non-crisis to a crisis because of Joe Biden's words and policies of his administration, hamstringing, of course, the Border Patrol. But think about this number. Criminal organizations that are trafficking women, children, families, single adults, you know, the drugs, everything that goes together, the traffickers themselves are earning as much as $14 million a day. Right. That was back in February. It's only gotten worse since February. So what does that number get to, $18 million a day? On top of that, the Biden administration is having to spend $86 million on a contract for hotel rooms to hold 1,200 migrant families as the crisis exceeds the holding capacity for ICE. So, I mean, we're spending considerable amount of money, and the bad guys are making a considerable amount of money.
So you have to look at this in the context of an organized criminal activity, because that's what this is. You have these groups or cartels, and they run drugs, they run people, and they traffic people. What does that mean? You pay for your children to be brought over, and then you never really know what happens to them. That's, of course, the difficulty. You've got now a crisis at the border where children are being, again, displaced, held in. In fact, we could show it. This is what it looks like right now. If you're watching on any of our social media platforms or on TV, this is what it looks like.
They remove cages and put plastic wrap instead. I mean, remember, these are the guys who built the initial cages, the Biden team. It was not the Trump team. And they're only supposed to be there 72 hours. They're staying for weeks plus.
Because there's nowhere for them to go.
Interesting, though, we have no obligation. Federal court judge found earlier this year, the U.S. is not legally obligated to accept unaccompanied minors. You can process them and get them right home to families wherever they are in Central America. Most of them are Central American minors. If you can locate a family member, you send them home. You don't take them into your country to then try to figure out where to put them or how to reunite them with their family. Or is their family even there? Because we just pointed out, some of these traffickers are paid to send older kids over without their families. So they go over without families. They don't have someone to connect to here. They're kind of close to the age of adulthood, 16, 17 years old, and their families pay to get them over the border thinking that somehow life will be, you know, they'll get into a better school, they'll get into a better life.
But Joe Biden will not go down there and visit those. He will not visit the site.
He says at some point he will.
Yeah, well, that means he doesn't want to confront the problem.
The only reason we have that picture is a member of Congress. The media has not been allowed into these facilities.
So, Than, very quickly, because we're going on a break here. Mike Pompeo is going to be in the third segment of the broadcast today. We'll get to more of this in the next segment. What is the reaction in Washington? Because this is, it's a crisis.
Yeah, well, it turns out that the U.S. policy has real ramifications, Jay. I mean, if you say that you won't get in and the law will be enforced, people don't come. If you say our borders are open and there's not going to be real enforcement, well, guess what? There's going to be a flood of migrants. It's exactly what we're seeing. And, Jay, it didn't take a guessing game. We knew this is what would happen.
Yeah, well, it's exactly what's happened. And what we're going to do, and I just asked Than about this, why is there not bipartisan legislation dealing with the trafficking element? This is a continuing criminal enterprise. Billions of dollars involved. You're talking about $14 million a day is what these traffickers are earning. $14 million a day. So then you ask yourself, how do we fight back? We'll talk about that when we come back from the break.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
I want you to listen to how the Biden administration is trying to shift and act like this has nothing to do with them. So you've got the DHS secretary, and he's talking about this with Chris Wallace, and Mayorkas is saying, well, you know, is this really, whose fault is this really that this is happening? Bite 10, take a listen.
We are on pace to encounter more individuals on the southwest border than we have in the last 20 years. Mr. Secretary, do you not see a connection between the surge at the border and the policy changes that Joe Biden has made in his first 2 months?
Chris, I do not. What I am seeing is the result, and what we are seeing is the result of President Trump's dismantlement of the safe and orderly immigration processes that were built over many, many years by presidents of both parties.
Nonsense, right?
Unreal.
I mean, that is just spinning to spin, because take a listen. Martha Raddatz went down to the border. She asked an immigrant, would you try this when Donald Trump was president? Take a listen to this, by 23.
Would you have tried to do this when Donald Trump was president?
Definitely not. Definitely. We had the chance, you know, the same violence that is going on today was there last year. We used to watch the news, and I definitely won't do this.
So did you come here because Joe Biden was elected president?
Basically.
There it is. They took Joe Biden's words as good, that the border is open again, things are going to change, or we're going to allow more illegal immigration into our country, or these asylum claims that end up not being adjudicated properly because they don't make sense because they didn't even hit the right language. I mean, that what I see here is you see the Biden administration still unwilling to recognize the problem they've caused. They're going to still try to blame it on Donald Trump, but the immigrants themselves, the people down at the border themselves are saying, we are here because of Joe Biden. They got signs saying we're here because of Joe Biden.
Well, look, I mean, here's the facts. I mean, we always have to do is we have to look at the facts, and the facts are very clear. What is the facts? The facts are that we have a crisis at the border that Joe Biden says, well, I'll go down there at some point. Meanwhile, the policy he's implemented, you can't blame this on Donald Trump. The policy he implemented has allowed for this, and it was the Obama-Biden administration that put those cages in place. But I want everybody listening to our broadcast, we'll take your calls on this at 800-684-3110. Think about these children, and think about the fact that these cartel operators are making $14 million a day. And I asked this to Than during the break. How is there not bipartisan legislation to crack down on child trafficking? Now, there's state laws. We worked on those. But from a federal level, because that's what this is, child trafficking.
Yeah, we worked on the state laws, Jay. A lot of this does become a federal issue because so much of it happens immediately as they pour over the border. There have been bipartisan bills in Congress, Jay, and that most of them have fallen on sort of one of two sides of the ledger. One have been on a focus on prosecuting perpetrators. That's the enforcement piece of it. That's been met with stiff resistance on the left. That's been the challenge on that side of it. The second part of it has been care for the victims. You know, children, Jay, you said it, I think. Children are basically currency in this situation. They come across as property and a pass into the country. That's been sort of the second portion of bills. But, Jay, both of those bills are almost impossible to actually be successful and have true utility unless you have what? A secure border. If the border's not secure and you can't actually catch them as they come across, every bill that would pass is going to be very difficult to have utility in. That's really been the conundrum in D.C., Jay.
This is a serious serious problem for our country. Let's do this, Jordan. Let's take some phone calls. 800-684-3110. Yep. Lines are starting to jam up, but they'll free up, so keep trying. 1-800-684-3110 if you want to comment or question about this.
Sure. Robert's calling from Maryland on line one. Hey, Robert.
Yeah. Hi, Jordan, and hi, Jay. I wanted to ask the both of you about what's the estimated number of migrants that are a part of the caravan that are making their way to the border, and within that number of migrants that are coming toward the United States southern border, about what the percentage of them are unaccompanied minors?
Well, they don't have a breakdown of we don't have a breakdown yet of the unaccompanied minors per se. Do they have the exact breakdown or estimates?
It says it looks like in February, which is the month they have the latest statistics, about 2,200 children have been illegally crossing the border weekly in February. The government's projecting that about 9,000 children will be taken into custody by the end of February. So they're still going through those numbers. So somewhere close to 10,000 unaccompanied minors is what we're talking about in Robert. And I think it's only gotten worse from February to today.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So we're only getting numbers based off February's numbers. And I think you start including March numbers, you're talking probably about 20,000 unaccompanied minors. When you look at how this has got out of control also in the month of March. It's not like it's gotten better. Since February, it's gotten worse.
This is what the smuggling fees run for children somewhere between $4,000 and $5,000. For adults, it's $8,000 to $9,000. I mean, this is unreal. So this is the smuggling. I'm giving you the smuggling revenue from February. $34 million for children coming out of Central America. This is answering Robert's question. Central American families, another $80.7 million. Central American single adults, $139 million. Individuals from Mexico alone, $157 million. Total February, $411,500,000. Fan, this is a crisis at the border, and it is taxing our resources, and it is putting children in harm's way.
Taxing our resources, and it's a humanitarian crisis almost that can't be explained. Jay, this is going to make people cringe, but I think they need to hear it. Another thing that happens to these kids is they get what's called recycled, and that's such a crass word. But Jay, essentially they're brought over the border as a free ticket into the country, and then the people that bring them disappear into the interior of the country. What happens to the kids? Jay, they're sent back to be brought over a second time, recycled, if you will, to be the admission ticket for another set of people. Look, and the last thing I'll say on this, Secretary Mayorkas, Jay, it's awfully rich to hear his excuses on this, because the reason he was nominated, Jay, he's an infamous open borders guy. This is what he's about.
Well, the country's paying the penalty for it, but you know who else is? These kids. That's who's paying the penalty.
It's a humanitarian crisis that the U.S. is responsible for creating. It's not to say that these other countries aren't aiders and abettors in Central America. But who is allowing this to occur, and who is spending the resources, our resources, your taxpayer dollars, $86 million on hotel rooms? This is an administration that's only been in office for 3 months. Months, and they've got a disaster like this where they're trying to cover up their eyes.
2 months.
Tried to close their eyes.
2 months.
And ignore the crisis at the border. They won't let the media in. They won't, only photos have gotten out because of members of Congress who have gone down there. They don't want the media in. They're not being transparent. Joe Biden's, you know, still not doing press conferences, still won't go to the border. All this to being said, they were supposed to be so transparent. As usual, they're Democrats. They're liberals. They're the least transparent.
None of these
surprise,
are the least
surprise, it's the Obama team back again to mislead you, to lie, and hide information as long as possible. And they try to hide it sometimes for years.
You know, they talked about the recycled children, which is horrific. This is a recycled administration.
Yes.
And you're seeing the same failed policies. And I'm going to tell you, when you have this kind of situation, you've got to be vigilant. Let's take one more call before the break.
Sure. Chris in Nevada, online four. Hey, Chris.
Hi. If this was the Trump administration, there's no doubt somebody would be suing it. How come nobody's suing the Biden administration, even under some type of RICO theory?
I don't think it's a RICO theory, but I will tell you this. The attorney generals of Texas and I think Arizona are looking at litigation right now. Maybe Texas may have filed over the weekend. So it's not going to go unredressed because it's putting a tremendous amount of burden on Texas and the Texas administration. So, you know, this is it's a multifaceted issue with a multifaceted problem.
Well, I don't care about COVID when it comes to this.
No. Yeah, they don't require
another
COVID
large
testing.
Gathering of people, mass gatherings in these mass facilities, and talking about, they love talking about Republican super spreader events. This is a super spreader event when you got people on the border that you know have not been vaccinated, who are coming from the tougher countries in Central America, and yet they're congregating in mass. And we're welcoming that.
Judy Sullivan on Facebook said, the Biden team loves pointing the finger at Trump, but this isn't going to work this time. And, Fan, it's not, because this is their policy.
Yeah, it's their policy, Jay, and the border towns that are bearing the brunt of this. And by the way, it's not just border towns. They're also going to have these facilities in interior states as well. Jay, I would imagine that those states, those localities, they'll look at this policy, and you'll probably start to see bipartisan pushback. That won't happen in D.C., Jay, but across the country, I bet you will.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Folks, we are going to look at ways in which we can protect these kids, first of all, coming over, but protect our country. So if these attorney generals start filing suits, the ACLJ is going to file right along. So let me encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ. We're in a matching challenge. We're down to the last about 11 days. And we're doing great, but your support makes a huge difference. That means any amount you donate to us, not only is tax deductible, we get a matching gift for. Jordan's going to let you know the details. Let me encourage you, be part of the matching challenge campaign.
So if you go on ACLJ.org, you'll say donate today. Your tax deductible gift will be doubled. It's because we have a group of donors ready to match every donation that comes through in the month of March. Donate today. Double your impact to the ACLJ online at ACLJ.org. Joining us next, our team member, Mike Pompeo, one of the latest additions to the ACLJ team. He'll be joining us live. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Secula, we are joined by a special ACLJ Senior Counsel for Global Affairs, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, a member of the ACLJ team, is joining us live now. Secretary Pompeo, it's always great to have you. You've got a new piece up at ACLJ.org called "The Regime in Iran Will Change Only When It Is at Risk." And you talk about one of the biggest misconceptions about the Iran nuclear deal, saying that there's this misconception out there that if there's no JCPOA, if there's no Iranian nuclear deal, there has to be war. But then again, you point out the Trump administration, your leadership and President Trump's left the JCPOA and there was no war.
You know, Jordan, this thing was sold to us, this central thesis, which was, boy, if we don't bribe the Iranian regime, if we don't send them pallets of cash, if we don't look the other way when they conduct assassination campaigns in Europe and conduct terror against Israel, when they continue to underwrite Hezbollah, if we just allow them to do those things, maybe we can keep them from heading down a nuclear pathway. And the alternative, the only alternative that was facing America, was to confront them and we'd end up in a war with Iran. We knew that wasn't true, and we proved it. We've now got 3.5 years where we can demonstrate that we left the JCPOA. We put enormous pressure on the regime. We made lives better for those people who weren't inside the regime, but instead around it. And the result of that wasn't war. We're not in a war with Iran. Iran knew we were serious. We knew that they knew that deterrence from the Trump administration was real. And we were charting a course towards getting an understanding from the regime that said, this will be enormously costly if you continue down this path. And we were close to getting to a place where we could have finally, once and for all, resolved this issue of nuclear weapons in Iran.
Secretary Pompeo, one of the issues that comes up frequently, and that is the proxy war nature of what the Iranian regime does. I think it'd be important for our audience to explain that it's just not Iranian soldiers operating in Iran, that they're throughout the Middle East.
Yeah, that's really important. And our administration understood that, and we didn't let them get away with it. One of the things that a nation like Iran tries to do is to use these proxies to shield themselves. So if there's a missile launched from Yemen into Saudi Arabia, the Iranians would say, we don't have anything to do with this. We flipped that on its head. We held them accountable for each of those. So whether it was the Houthi terrorists in Yemen, whether it's the money that has gone to Hezbollah that holds Israel at risk, whether it's all that they did in Syria to cause 6 million people to live horrible lives by having to flee their homeland in Syria. These are the proxy forces. These are the surrogates that the Iranians use to foment terror around the world. And they do it because they hope that the United States will, like the Biden administration did, when there's a round that comes near an American, well, we'll respond by blowing up a building in Syria. We responded differently. We held the Iranian leadership itself accountable. The strike on Qasem Soleimani was the perfect example of that, where we didn't let the Iranians hide behind the skirts of the proxy forces.
But we know now that Secretary Pompeo, that you've got the Biden team in place who wrote this deal. They've risen to higher levels now. The author of it, main author, is the National Security Advisor to President Biden. So what you wrote in your piece, too, is that it looks like that they're on the plan to do whatever they can possible to try and appease this regime, to get them to come back to the table, if that's economic sanctions relief or whatever that may be, anything so that they can go. And as you say, and I say often too, so that John Kerry can go with his buddy Zarif and sip coffee or tea together. But it does seem like they are willing to do anything to get back to the negotiating table. But you point out that Ayatollah and the Iranian leadership, they're not going to do anything if it's not benefiting them immediately.
Yeah, Jordan, they do seem committed to it. It's the same cast of characters, whether it's Rob Malley or Wendy Sherman or Jake Sullivan. These were the folks who were the central authors of the Obama JCPOA, with Vice President Biden being supportive of it as well. So it's the same team. Their intent on it is something that they believe in deeply. They're wrong. What we hope is that they will see that this isn't 2014 or 2015 anymore, that the Middle East has changed, whether it's the work that we did to generate the Abraham Accords, whether it's the work that we did to put real pressure on the regime and allow the Iranian people for the first time to have a real shot at having leadership that cared about them and not about fomenting terror or stealing from them. We hope they'll see that the facts have changed so significantly. We hope they will see that the countries that are most at risk from Iran, the Saudis, the Emiratis, the Bahrainis, and of course our deep longtime partner, ally, friends of the state of Israel. We hope they'll see that those countries understand that Iran is the problem and not the solution, and that they will reconsider the path that they appear to be headed down. I'm not optimistic, but I know that when they see the facts, when they read the intelligence that we saw, it is not possible to believe that going back into that deal makes any sense. And I don't think the Ayatollah thinks going back into that deal makes any sense for him and for his theocratic kleptocrats either.
Mike, one of the things that I found, I continue to find interesting in all of this, is that there's an acknowledgement across the board that the Iranians are not, and the regime, we're not talking about the people, the regime is not in compliance with the JCPOA. Now, it's true that the United States pulled out, but the Europeans stayed in it. So if everyone's acknowledging that they violated the agreement, why in the world would we trust them and go back in? It makes no sense.
Jay, it makes no sense. It's something that's worth noting, and that the Biden administration won't refer to, is they had not complied with their commitments under the deal from the get-go. There was a requirement that they disclose all of their nuclear sites and nuclear material before the JCPOA could come into effect. It's complicated, but you'll remember Senator Cotton and I found some secret side deals on this very topic before the JCPOA was finalized. Seems like a long time ago. Suffice it to say, we now know for certain that they continue to have undeclared nuclear sites, that they never lived up to their commitments. And so your point is well taken. Before the deal, during the deal, and now even after the United States has left the deal, but the Europeans have remained, the Iranians have treated this as something that was something they'd do if it was useful, and they wouldn't if it was not. There's no reason to think that going back into this agreement is going to have the Iranians come into full compliance with the promises that they have made.
You know, one thing I want to talk to you about today, too, the new blog is up. It's at aclj.org. The regime in Iran will change only when it is at risk. That is by Secretary Pompeo, ACLJ's senior counsel for global affairs. But I can't not ask you about what's happening at the border and the spin that we're starting to see for the Biden administration, but also some reality checks maybe coming towards the Biden administration as well about how serious it is when they change the policy, and just how important it is, the words you use, like Joe Biden's words he used, and you're seeing these people on the border interviewed say, no, I wouldn't have tried this under President Trump, but Joe Biden basically said, come along.
Yeah, he invited them in. He created an incentive for them to come. And these people, these poor desperate people, are now coming, and they're coming in droves, and it is an enormous humanitarian crisis. It's also a crisis for the United States, a national security crisis for the United States. I was very involved in working with the foreign minister in Mexico and Mexico's president at putting the humane policies in place that allowed the people in El Salvador and Honduras and Guatemala to understand they weren't going to be able to come into the United States, that it wasn't going to happen, that they didn't have valid asylum claims. And yet this administration has gone the other direction. It's tragic to watch what's going on out there each day. It's going to get worse. The policies that we put in place, and it took us many, many months to get them in place, ought to be reinstated. If we do, there'll be a more humane policy with respect to immigration. We'll shut down these unlawful pathways, and we won't create the incentives to risk American sovereignty either.
Former Secretary of State and former Director of the CIA, Mike Pompeo, who happens to also be Senior Counsel for the ACLJ on Global Affairs, thanks as always for being with us, and we encourage people, read the article. Get informed. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you, Jordan.
The reason why we're able to have team members like Mike Pompeo join the American Center for Law and Justice is because of your financial support to the ACLJ. We have a matching challenge month of March. Whatever your donate is effectively double, because we have a group of donors ready to match any donation that comes through in the month of March. So donate today. We'll be right back. Second half hour of Seculo.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
All right, welcome back to Sekulow. It's great to have former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, an ACLJ team member. Let me remind you again, the reason why we have team members like Mike Pompeo, like Rick Rennell, is because of your tremendous financial support to the American Center for Law and Justice. We were able to expand our team both in that public role that they play and the behind-the-scenes role they play. And, of course, if we're able to bring on the Mike Pompeos and the Rick Rennells, you know, we're able to expand our team as well with those who may not be as well-known by name or the political work that they've done or the careers they've had, but have those kind of expertise that we've been expanding at the ACLJ. Be part of our matching challenge. Double the impact of your donation at ACLJ.org throughout the entire month of March. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Bob. He's actually calling in from Hong Kong. This is a great part about broadcasting online and on very different outlets. Hey, Bob, welcome to Sekulow.
Thank you. I just like to tell you about an act and how it involves the homeless children. My own child is involved in this act because I'm not living in the U.S. It's called the McKinley-Vento Homeless Assistance Act, and it was put in place by President Reagan. And what it does is when a child, even if they're not a citizen, is in the United States, they're entitled to free education, free medical, free food, free transportation to school up to the age of 24 years old. And I'm sure that the people who are coming know about this act because it's well known in the United States. Every school district has a liaison along with a state coordinator who handles these children.
So here's the question, and I don't know, and I'm looking at it now, and I'd have to go to our team to kind of...
I just looked up the definition of homeless children.
Does it include children that are not citizens?
Yeah, so I think it says it means individuals, so it's not defined as citizenship, who lack a fixed, regular, and adequate nighttime resident within the meaning of Sections 103. So there's not, I don't see a definition that would exclude it, but there's probably regulations involved. But this is, look, any benefit achieved.
It's part four. Migratory children.
Yep.
Who qualify as homeless for the purpose of the subtitle because the children are living in circumstances it's describing.
So they're included.
So they are included, again, because
Bob's right.
Of their situation. So yeah, I think that they do know the laws. The question is, the initial act of trying to get over the border with a bogus asylum claim or one that doesn't work because you've already passed through a number of countries and you didn't make the claim in Mexico, economic purposes, that is the driving problem here. Then you have the crisis of what happens when everyone is here. And these are not primarily Mexicans. They're primarily Central Americans who have traveled through Mexico to get to the border and then try to put in claims, catch and release, all those different kind of policies they're hoping for. The problem is this creates that silent people living in the shadows, Dad, who don't ever get the law's never really clear for how they live, so they live in the shadows. They get things teased out like, oh, we'll extend the deferred action for childhood arrivals, but that only works for children, and then eventually you just start living in the gray area.
And that's exactly right, and believe me, the people that bring these kids over, these cartels that are trafficking these children, are giving these parents all the benefits that these kids are going to obtain, the medical, the education. Right. So that's part of the sales pitch. And again, we've got to, you know, look, I've got to have compassion on the kids, and I do. So you got to figure that situation out. But that's what I was asking, Than. I've got our legislative team working to see. There's got to be a bipartisan solution to this situation. I mean, that's really what we're looking for here. What is the bipartisan response to this situation?
There isn't one is the problem. Because on the left, they want to legalize everybody and keep the border flowing because they think it's an easy Democrat vote. They would, but at the same time, they know that Republicans won't go for that. They don't have the votes for that. So instead, they just use it as a political issue. And that's what's the worst thing, is that these people get treated like political pawns, ultimately, by the left. It is by the left. They don't actually want immigration reform. They like to keep these people in the shadows, dangle it out as a partisan issue in election cycles, and then, you know, not talk about it every few years. We'll be right back on Sekulow.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. So, you know, you've got the national security implications of a border crisis because of the traffickers, the terror groups that blend in with these traffickers. We know about that. It's documented. It's not conspiracy theory. It's just truth. The sex trafficking, the drug trafficking, using these people as drug mules. You know, as Stan said, you know, they recycle these children. Who knows what else they're bringing with them, not just themselves and a group of people, to get settled down, so they get catch and release, but maybe drugs as well. I mean, so that's why traffickers right now are making up to $14 million a day. Not like, again, think about that. That has happened under the Biden administration. And when you're talking about traffickers making $14 million a day, you were talking about some of the most dangerous drug cartels in the entire world. And they impact the security of the United States. They also impact the security of the border states. I mean, Abigail's calling from Texas on line 5. We're taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Yeah,
especially like to hear from border states.
Yeah, I mean, it's because this is not yet spread out. It will eventually. These people are going to be resettled in your community wherever you are, folks. They're not just staying at the border. But Abigail, I think, you know, you're seeing it firsthand in Texas. Welcome to Seculo. You're on the air with us.
Good day and blessings on your important work.
Thanks.
So, yeah, I'm wondering, you know, how long is it going to be before we start seeing the ripple effect here in our communities, in our streets, in our neighborhoods? And what can we do to get behind our lawmakers and our leaders to put some teeth into this effort?
I know Ken Paxton, your attorney general in Texas, is looking at potential legal action. But I think it's first... You first have to address, I'm going to go to Harry Hutchison on this, and that is our director of policy. There's a policy component to this that's very important. I think the problem is the Biden policy, which was this kind of, oh, you know, welcome everybody, come in. And then he says, oh, no, don't come in. It was too late. I mean, it's a huge industry. It's an industry generating hundreds of millions of dollars a month getting these people in.
Absolutely. And so I think it's clear, despite the Biden administration's denials, that it is precisely their change in policy which has caused this crisis at the border. It's also important to note that the Biden officials keep denying that there is a crisis at the border. The only way you can deny that there is a crisis at the border is by engaging in either one of two things: willful blindness or putting your head in the sand. And apparently the Biden administration is doing both simultaneously. So there is a huge policy change that has led to this border crisis, and it was foreseeable. House Representative Sheila Jackson Lee admits that there is a crisis at the border, notwithstanding that the Biden administration refuses to allow journalists to go down and see for themselves and continues to deny what is obvious for most rational Americans.
Wes, what about the, I mean, because this is the reality of the situation. The policy was, under the Trump administration, was very tough, and I think appropriate. They talked about this child separation thing. That was going on under the Obama administration. It's going on right now under the Biden administration. What do you think is the response here? What's the appropriate response?
I think part of the appropriate response is to simply enforce the laws and policies that were in place when Joe Biden was sworn into office. You look at what Harry was saying there and just go through some of the things President Biden has done. He's telling people not to come, but he's actually, his policies are encouraging them to come. He has, for example, refused to use an emergency order that's in place that turns away children at the border who are unaccompanied and endeavors to send them back to their home country and to relatives there. He will not use that order. He has ended agreements with Mexico on the migrant protection protocols where you remain in Mexico while your asylum application is being processed. He has actually ended, Jay, cooperation with the Central American countries to stop the flow from within their own borders. He also refuses to enforce the law that states if you cross illegally, you cannot apply for asylum. That's actually on the books as a law. Those who are allowed to enter are given court dates so they can return. Of course, most of them don't come back for their hearings. But in addition to that, CBC officials released over the weekend that now they are being told, because they're so overwhelmed, that they simply are going to release people into the interior of the United States without even giving them a summons to come back to court. And here's the other thing. The Biden administration, and we wrote about this on our website, they have suspended Operation Talon, which says that if you are a convicted sex offender, right, you are automatically deported. You just go down the list of things that he's doing. It is like an open invitation, not only for people to cross the border illegally, but some of the worst people to cross the border illegally.
And they don't, Jordan, want to call it a crisis. No, they want to say it's a situation at the border.
Joe Biden will go. I mean, take a listen. And when they went with members of Congress, these photos got out from members of Congress staff, but they're not allowing media in. They're citing child privacy concerns, but the media should be able to go in at least without cameras and be able to report on the conditions instead of having to rely on members of Congress with partisan views, honestly.
Right.
I'd rather have media go in and just tell us what's going on in these facilities. But here is a reporter just asking Joe Biden, why aren't you there? Take a listen.
Are you thinking of going to the border?
At some point I will, yes.
You want to see firsthand what's going on in those facilities?
I know what's going on in those facilities.
I just don't know how you can truly understand what's going on in those facilities without seeing it. It'd be hard for me to imagine this amount of people, 15,000 plus kids, just the unaccompanied minors, flooding facilities that they weren't prepared ready for, and because our border was effectively shut down under the Trump administration. And now they're spending $86 million on hotels, so he can't know what it looks like, because it's going to look like something a lot different than what you're thinking of, folks. This crisis is going to come to your neighborhood, because they're going to put people in hotels all over the country. They're not going to put them all in Texas and Arizona. They're going to spread this crisis out. And this is how you create new neighborhoods of people who live in the shadows. They end up getting some day labor to work. They end up getting some jobs. But they never get citizenship. They're here illegally. So what is that number of 20 million going to go up to 30, 40 million under Biden?
Yeah.
Yes, if unchecked.
Yeah, and we have a great question coming in from Paul in Idaho. Let's take it.
Hey, Paul, welcome to Secular. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks. I'm wondering why. What is the center, the hub of why they're doing this? What do they want to accomplish, and why is the Biden administration doing it?
My view is that there's politics behind this, and that is eventually there's going to be citizenship. It may be 5 years from now, maybe 4 years from now, maybe 10 years from now, but that's the plan. And the assumption would be that if the citizenship was granted under Joe Biden's administration, that in fact that these 30 or 40 million people would vote Democratic. That, I think, Harry, from a policy standpoint, is what they're thinking in the back of their heads.
I think that's precisely...
I may not admit that, but I think that's part of this.
I think that's precisely correct. So I think the objective from the Democrats, particularly the ideologues, is to transform, as Chuck Schumer would say, America, to transform the politics and the policies. And I think the American people that are perceptive know that it's quite likely that progressive policies, generally speaking, poison everything and prepare the American people, the nation, the Constitution, and the rule of law for burial. So if you consider the Biden administration's policy, from the border and national security issues to abortion fueled by a deep commitment to eugenics, to tax policies that arguably violate state sovereignty, death, destruction, and tragedy are likely to surface. Why? Because the radicals are now in charge, and many of those radicals despise America. They are quite willing to claim that the United States is pervaded by what? Racism against black and brown and Asian people. But nonetheless, they are opening the borders to brown people. So many of their policies and their approaches are absolutely incoherent, but they absolutely put the interest of the American people second.
Yeah, I think ultimately, listen, they do hope this will be an election, a winning issue for them long term. Short term, though, they're happy to just dangle this as an issue for legal Hispanics who do vote and Latino voters in the immediate future. So they say, we've got to get immigration reform for these 20 million, 30 million, 40 million, whatever. And they never really get it because they like using it as an election issue just to make sure that the current Latino and Hispanic Americans stay on the Democrat side, which we saw in the last election cycle. They started moving away from the Democrats in the last two election cycles. So this is a way to try and bring them back. Bring them back in. See, we're letting people like you in. But if you actually ask those people who are here legally, who are Hispanic or Latino, they think this is horrendous. It's bad for them. It's bad for their kids. It's bad for their communities as well, because it is promoting illegal activity and rewarding traffickers of humans.
Well, you saw the number.
The worst of the worst.
We're going to go over those again. We come back from the break.
Of humans. Those are the worst kind of people, really the worst kind of crime. That's in sex trafficking, drug trafficking, making them into drug mules, abusing children. The list goes on. Support our work at the ACLJ Matching Challenge. Donate today. Double your impact.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Secular, we are going to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. If you missed it earlier in the broadcast, a former Secretary of State, a former CIA Director, and current ACLJ Senior Counsel for Global Affairs, Mike Pompeo, joined us to talk about these very issues, including the mixture of Iran, the Middle East, terrorism, and also the border. And James is calling in exactly about that. New Mexico online, too. Hey, James, welcome to Secular. You're on the air. Hey, James, you there? All right, we'll try to go back to James in just a minute. We'll see if he reconnects. Let's go to Cindy in Texas on border line state. Three, another yep. border state. Hey, Cindy, welcome to Secular.
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot. Love sure. what you do. I live in the Dallas area. I'm very concerned about the 3,000 15 to 17-year-old boys that are going to end up being released into our area. But my two questions are this. Could border states, for instance, like Texas, have a Texas policy instead of having to go with what is happening out of Washington? And also, what I'd really like to know is if our border states, like Texas, can fill in those places where they had to get the trucks through and build our own wall and clean that up.
Well, I mean, remember, Arizona tried to do just that. Now, there's been a shift to the Supreme Court. There could be, you'd have to really analyze whether there's been enough of a shift to the Supreme Court to bring another challenge. So put in laws like you're talking about, Cindy, that will be challenged, that you would then go all the way to the Supreme Court. Under the existing Supreme Court precedent, there's basically no power in the states. They couldn't even authorize their police to work alongside ICE right. and DHS. So Arizona with the driver's license, with all those different things they tried to do, Cindy, the Supreme Court said no because of the Constitution. This falls squarely under the role of Congress and the federal government. It is their responsibility. Now, remember that. You can't blame your state officials here. They will try and do everything they can, file lawsuits, may even do some of the things you're talking about at the risk of being sued. But at the end of the day, it is the federal government's responsibility. Yep. Joe Biden, the buck stops with Joe Biden.
So I was going to go to Harry first on this, and you look at it from a policy. It's very frustrating for the state of Texas. I know that in just speaking with officials over the years, because the Supreme Court has said, as Jordan pointed out, basically this is a federal issue and states have no authority here.
That's precisely correct. So at the end of the day, border states bear a disproportionate burden with respect to the illegal immigration and the illegal policy objectives of the Biden administration. Now, there may be a possibility for states to sue the federal government to bring a lawsuit because, from an economic standpoint, you could argue that there are some externalities that are associated with the Biden administration's policy. Meaning, for instance, that the state of Texas, as the caller mentioned, now has to deal with 3,000 boys, let's say, in Dallas, who don't have jobs, who, for instance, are committing crime or engaged in other illegal activities. That could be attributed to a federal policy. But the hope is that there will be a bipartisan effort to slow or to reverse the Biden yep. policy, because many of the Democrats in Congress, they recognize that their constituents are bearing a disproportionate burden, and that is certainly true in Texas.
But there is a complete refusal to acknowledge that there's a crisis on the border. Now, there was a slip-up. I want to play this.
Yeah.
Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, was asked about some of this, and then I'm going to play both. Let's start with 25.
The vaccine was given, were there expectations set with the Mexicans that they helped deal with the situation on the border?
There have been expectations set outside of, unrelated to any vaccine doses or requests for them, that they would be partners in dealing with the crisis on the border.
Okay, crisis on the border. Then, moments later, listen to this.
When you were talking a moment ago about diplomatic negotiations between the United States and Mexico,
You said crisis on the border. Was that a
challenges on the border?
Okay, but so that doesn't reflect any change in
nope.
the administration's view of things.
Nope.
When you refuse to identify the problem, you're incapable of solving it.
Yeah, these are not challenges. Challenges are something you can, you know, you kind of deal with very easily. They wouldn't grab the country's attention. You wouldn't need to rent $86 million worth of hotel rooms. $86 million of your taxpayer dollars are being used to house illegal immigrants because of Donald Trump's policies that worked were reversed.
Exactly right. Now, the question, that is exactly right.
And by the way, those hotels are going to turn into disaster zones. And like the caller said, you're releasing a lot of 15 to 17-year-old adolescent boys
yep.
who are basically men almost, under most legal definitions, actually, if they commit crimes, would be treated as men. And you're going to release them into places. They're going to have to try and survive. Survive usually means committing crimes. And so you are going to spread this around the country.
Because we have no infrastructure as a country in place. Now, Wes, it's interesting to me. You know, she slips up and says crisis on the border. Then she corrects herself, challenges. But words there's consequences with words.
Yeah, absolutely. They're not only asking us to suspend disbelief, they are themselves suspending their own disbelief. I mean, listen to what Secretary Mayorkas said over the weekend on multiple news channels. He said that not only is the border closed, Mayorkas says the border is indeed also secure. They're totally in denial.
They are totally in denial. Let's go ahead and take a last call here.
Yeah, Peggy called in from Oregon Online 4. Hey, Peggy.
Hey. Why aren't we doing something to impeach Biden and punish this puppet
master? There aren't the votes. You know, I used to be one of those people that said, don't do it. It's mean. It's nasty. If there were the votes, go right ahead. But make sure you have enough votes to impeach Kamala Harris, too. And probably about three or four down the line. So you got to have enough impeachments where you can impeach like three people and have one person kicked out of the House of Representatives. I guess that would be Pelosi, right? So we need enough House members to kick her out, which they can do under their rules, and then three impeachment votes necessary. I used to say no to these ideas. I now say if we had the votes, go right ahead.
Well, that's what they...
Because that's what they tried to do to President Trump.
Well, that's what they did do to President Trump. I mean, they couldn't get a conviction, but they were turning into policy disagreements. I mean, that whole thing over Ukraine was policy disagreements into an impeachment. And then you had the last impeachment. But this is where they've cheapened the... Words have consequences. They've cheapened the importance of saying some offense is impeachable. Having said that, what Jordan said is absolutely right, though, also. You don't have the votes. So reality, folks, I mean, we got to deal with the deck we've got. Yeah. And the deck we've got right now is the House and Senate and the White House are controlled by people that don't view this as a crisis.
And you see how quickly a crisis can unravel. And ultimately, I think they will call it a crisis. They will come up with some terminology.
Yeah.
They're going to acknowledge how bad it is. And you know what they're going to want? A big spending bill to deal with it. So put that on your radar. The $1.2 trillion wasn't enough to deal with this.
Nancy Pelosi has already signaled a big infrastructure bill, a big immigration bill, big everything, because at the end of the day, what do the Democrats want most? More power and more government control.
You know, folks, again, we will talk to you tomorrow. Just seeing that there's an upcoming book celebrating Dr. Fauci's life. I feel like our listeners are not going to be buying that book. Mr. Happy Mask should I wear? 2 weeks to stop the spread, right? Anyhow, support the work of the ACLJ because
don't wear a mask.
Yeah, don't wear a mask. You're a bad person if you wear a mask. Support the work of the ACLJ. Double the impact of your donation. Matching challenge. Month of March continues. Double your impact. You go to ACLJ.org. We've got a group of donors ready to match every donation that comes through in the month of March. Donate today. ACLJ.org.
Everybody here, by the way, has been vaccinated.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.